the great cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
It's a tough, mean, dirty, dirty business being a great cricketer.
A lot of cricketers, you know, that's all they know. They've done it since they're 10 and they have a deep-seated fear of change.
But the great cricket is all about being the most alpha version of yourself as possible, at all costs and at all times.
I don't bat or bowl. I just feel the gully, count the number of dot balls in a row, sledge 15-year-olds, make me feel better about myself.
Thanks champ.
Oh, no, you called me champ.
Hello and welcome to the Grey Cricketer Podcast on Fox Sports. My name is Ian Higgins. I'm joined as ever by Dave Edwards and Sam Perry, and also a special guest today, who will do the honours of introducing our special guest, the most Grey Cricketer guest ever.
We're lucky to have with us here, and we literally just like picked him up as we were walking on the way to the offices.
It's like a Friday night phone call when you're one short.
Yeah, of course. Great start. With the CEO of Cricket New South Wales, Andrew Jones. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, gents. Really delighted to be here and honoured to be here. You guys do a terrific job. I love the book and love the tweets even more, so I'm sure the podcast will go one better.
We've kind of progressed through our 5 days of the test here because we're in a sort of whirring boardroom up the top of Cricket New South Wales, and now we're in the actual boardroom. I mean, are we in the room where you sit down with James Sutherland and work out which New South Wales players are going to get baggy greens?
This is where the brown paper bags are in a drawer over there.
Yeah.
Is that what that is? No.
Yeah, this is, I guess, where we have the board meetings, obviously, but it's also the library of Cricket New South Wales, so it documents the history of New South Wales, Australian and world cricket since more or less inception. So it's a great room to be in, and also where a lot of the decisions are made affecting the future of New South Wales and therefore Australian cricket.
I feel a lot more comfortable in this room as opposed to the trophy room before, because we've done a book and there are books in here, so I feel more comfortable here. But I've never done
it. Is our book in here?
I've never done it. Can't see it anyway. That's fine. Whereas I've never done a Sheffield Shield, you know, so I don't feel comfortable with that.
And you never will, mate.
And I never will. Despite Brendan Julian keep asking, have you ever lifted the Sheffield Shield? No.
Yeah.
Why would I have ever lifted the Sheffield Shield? Nah, good bloke, though.
Well, you'll notice outside the room there is an empty cabinet, which is Sheffield Shield sized, and that's where the Sheffield Shield goes when we win it and can get it out of the sacker, where it, for some reason, is permanently housed. Was probably showing a little bit of a sense of humour from Australian cricket.
Well, we'll quickly brush on the test because it is day five here. Gold coin entry to the ground. It seems like there's a lot of people out there enjoying the last day of the test summer here in Australia. What are your thoughts on how it's going to pan out?
Look, I'm biased. It's an all New South Wales bowling attack, so I think they'll get the wickets. I think they asked Steve Smith if he was going to give Hilton Cartwright a bowl, and he said, oh, we'll see. talking about the virtues of his two spinners and two fast bowlers. So, look, I think they'll get the wickets. I think Pakistan are tired, and they've shown through the season, through the series, periods of great fight, but then a tendency to lose wickets in clumps. Not that that's peculiar to Pakistan, but I think we'll be good enough to knock them over.
So we're recording this just before lunch on the final day, and probably the most disappointing thing has already happened today, and that Yunus won't be getting his 10,000th test run. Mm. He just fancied a lunch circuit, apparently. Mm. He just chipped one to Jackson Bird at mid-on, who's taken a lot of catches for a substitute fielder, which seems to happen all the time, but he took one at Gully the other night, took another one at innings as well, so he's got three grabs, so he's probably going to be close to getting in the team song.
Well, it's funny you say that, Higgins, because Andrew, you obviously had your own grade cricket career.
Yeah.
We were just talking about team songs before, and we'll get to it in a second, but do you want to perhaps describe what grade cricket means to you from a playing point of view?
Oh, I mean, grade cricket is the engine room of and the spiritual home of New South Wales cricket.
And dysfunction.
Sydney Test cricket.
Sydney Test cricket, yeah.
Yeah, exactly right. even though we've rebranded it Premier Cricket, you guys are
is that because of
staying
us?
Strong.
We always wonder if it was because of us.
We're actually genuinely considering a submission.
Change.org.
People will be calling grade cricket for another 50 years, so don't worry about that. For a lot of us, we always say strategically, grade cricket is the top of the bottom and the bottom of the top. It's the top of community cricket and obviously the bottom of the professional, not pathway so much, but professional cricket structure. And it's where players with aspirations to play for New South Wales or Australia or the Six or the Thunder or whomever ply their trade. in relative anonymity sometimes week after week, but it's also where the, you know, the best of the weekend warriors gather you know, average 18 with the bat and 45 with the ball and talk
good
rubbish.
That's good. Yeah. That's good.
And then demand selection.
That's really appealing.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, I've got a great fondness for it and, you know, I've spent many, many Saturdays at David Phillips and other grounds around Sydney, you know, not getting better at the game, but enjoying it nevertheless.
So if you had to describe yourself as a cricketer, I mean, you mentioned averages around 18 and bowling average of 45. Were you a batsman or a bowler, and what were your numbers?
And this is at Uni New South Wales.
This is at Uni of New South Wales, yeah. I think, well, let's just say my passion for the game is demonstrated by the fact that I played somewhere between 150, 200 games, not sure exactly, for Uni, and averaged about 18 or 19. Yeah. So somebody who does badly for so long must really love it. I always enjoyed captaining the most. You know, I found the strategy of cricket and the leadership elements really enjoyable, and the social aspects. And I was a battling opening batsman, poor man's Matthew Renshaw. I think about 1% of my career runs were scored in front of square on the offside.
Yeah. But you wore a suit to training, so you got the captain.
20% from Nicks through Gully when Gully didn't catch them, and then the rest were behind square on the onside. So very, very limited batsman, but very passionate one. Having said that, I opened the batting for most of my career, and then late in the piece, batted number 5, and it was a different world down there. That was that's where the circuit men bat, and it was so easy. I could have averaged at least 23 if I'd batted number 5.
Yeah, that's
the only reason Steve Waugh averaged about 50.
Well, there's a pattern emerging here, because you played at Uni New South Wales in grade cricket. We know you're the CEO of Cricket New South Wales. The CEO of the A-League, David Gallop, played at Uni New South Wales as well, and we know Todd Greenberg played at Randwick. I mean, what is it with grade cricket producing people of the executive class? And you just looking at your Wikipedia page as well, Andrew, you have an MBA from Stanford Uni. You worked at McKinsey and Company. So did you read broadsheet papers and was immediately branded a rare unit?
Well, I played a lot of sixth grade as well as a fair bit of fifth grade. So I was often umpiring when I wasn't batting, which was mostly. So I didn't get a lot of time to do the newspaper. But my dad would always do the crossword. He played for Uni as well as a couple of years at Bankstown, 3 years at Bankstown. And he was a mad crossword doer, but I'd usually be umpiring or scoring.
Did you ever play with your dad in a cricket match?
Not a great game. He retired, he moved to Victoria when I was in first year uni, I think. So I don't think we overlapped at the...
Just to play in the club?
So as soon as you started playing great cricket, he moved interstate.
Yeah, correct. Once he saw me play, he got out of there.
Just got out of the state, yeah.
Dave Gallop was certainly around when I started. I started at the club in first year uni, which was 92, and Dave Gallop was a first grade fixture at that stage, very good player. I think he probably got 240 odd wickets mostly in first grade. So, you know, he's a cricketer first, a rugby league man second, and I think soccer was
just a day job.
Convenience. Yeah, that's right.
Well, I mean, you were actually the president of Uni New South Wales for quite a while, and so you're quite familiar with all things UNSW, including the club song. We talked about club songs a couple of days ago with poet laureate Jeff Lemon, also a cricket writer.
German.
And a German. He analysed a couple of club songs. He analysed North Sydney's club song and Gordon's. And I just wanted to get your thoughts. And firstly, perhaps you can even read out the lyrics, or if you can remember them, from UNSW and their team song, which I believe was sung to the tune of The Gambler by Kenny Rogers.
That's right. It's called The Grundler. I might come back to the lyrics, but I think on club songs generally, I always hated them. I couldn't stand, and we lost more than we won, probably, mainly owing to an opening batsman who was only averaging 18, so it's hard to win with top order underperforming like that. And I always hated, you know, you'd had a hot day and hot 2 days, you've just been beaten, you haven't done very well yourself, and then you've got a bunch of yobbos shouting some barely literate and certainly tuneless ditty through a wafer of the dressing room wall.
No one's ever called a club song a ditty.
Yeah.
Should we do the ditty?
Yeah. I always found it, you know, vulgar, frankly, and ungracious. I was taught to be gracious in defeat and gracious in victory, and I always found club songs, you know, in the ungracious ungracious category. Having said that, when we won, of course, we sang with gusto. So,
did you abuse walls and stuff like that and get mad?
Well, I think the good thing about it, the thing I always liked about our club song, like a good uni club, we don't take ourselves too seriously. So the words are, instead of along the lines, we're great, we're great, we're great, aren't we great? What a great bunch of mates.
We all drink, don't we?
Yeah, we drink.
We're number one. We are best.
We work hard. We hate our wives.
that's not lives pronounced by Bill Laurie. That's just wives.
That's actually the Sydney Uni song.
ours are, you know, I've got a sense of humour associated with them, and are really about lazy cricketers more than weak opponents. So
self-deprecating.
Yeah, and I think now I'll forget a few lines because we didn't win enough to have it down pat, but it goes along the lines of, and it is to the gambler, on a warm Saturday arvo, on a wicket doing nothing, me and my partner were both too tired to run. So we took turns in grundling singles down to fine leg till boredom overtook us and we began to slog. And then the chorus, you've got to know when to grundle, know when to pongo, know when to save your legs, know when to run. You never count your savings when you're out there in the centre. There'll be time enough to count them when the drinking's done.
Always drinking.
Yeah, so drinking's in there.
Aside from that, very high ground.
It's actually self-deprecating, yeah. I like it. It's actually, yeah.
As you see it being sung with gusto, though, as well.
Yeah.
And it's a
tune. It's got a tune. Well, it's
tune breaks out every now and then. So
that actually is a ditty. Like, if that was, yeah. It's not barbaric. You can't really bash a stump against a bin.
It's not a war cry.
It's not a war cry. It's not primitive. It's very sophisticated.
We'll have to send it to Lemon, obviously.
For further analysis.
We might just need to write something and we'll post it up.
Yeah.
Just on administration, Andrew, it's often said that sledging in grade cricket is worse than it is at test level. It's more aggressive.
Yeah.
When you were the president of Union New South Wales, was that more aggressive and political than being the CEO of Cricket New South Wales?
I'll be honest with you. My time in grade cricket and lower grade cricket, there's very, very little sledging. I think there's a bit of encouragement of the bowler, the odd comment on your technique, but very, very little sledging. You know, usually young guys and everyone's in fifth grade, so there's not that much to be proud of on either side. So I think the sledging issue is grossly overstated. And even at first class and international level, I don't think there's really that much. I think that's...
It's kind of glorified, isn't it, a little bit?
Yeah, I think it's probably that was the case more in the past, but it's also something that people who don't like cricket like to hold against cricket without any real knowledge of the facts, but it was never really a factor in my time. And in fact, you know, a bit like the people in your books, and tweets, the sledges are more likely to come from teammates than the opposition, because we certainly bowled a lot of rubbish and played a lot of bad shots along the way.
Mm. Well, we thought we might get you to help us out with a few questions that have come in overnight. This is the Ask TGC segment. You're obviously a richly experienced grade cricketer yourself, and you know that's before we even talk about you being the Lord of Cricket New South Wales. So this one's coming, I can tell you,
by the way, just before you get onto that, the best preparation for this job, it was running UNSW Cricket Club, and I can assure you it's a lot easier to run Cricket New South Wales than it is to run a great cricket club, because you've got $15 or $16 million on your balance sheet rather than $15 or $16 on your balance sheet, and that's probably easier again than being a lower grade captain. I was the guy who was, you know, making 30 or 35 calls on a Thursday to try and get 11 and then another 10 on Friday or Saturday to try and get, that's right, you've always got 11 and you don't have to worry because you say, I'm going to pay you, you know, X grand to play for New South Wales, are you available for sure?
Can you make it?
Oh,
I'd say that, we've got a game against Queensland.
Okay, this one's from
Adam Bedford. It's an easy one. Why are you all so bloody hard to find on Twitter? Is it because you finally found some gloves, Dave?
Well, he's got that wrong. It's me always asking for gloves. So he doesn't know. Yeah, he's got the names wrong.
Yeah.
We haven't even vetted some of these.
I got one here from Connor Hughes, which I haven't vetted.
Brush that, okay.
In a long-running debate with a couple of mates from my park cricket T20 Summerside, is there a difference between dropping a catch and being so bewildered by the sun and a swirling high ball that you run out of position and don't get a hand on the ball? I supposedly robbed my mate of his best figures of the 2014-15 season by doing the latter, yet have repeatedly suggested to him that the fact I didn't touch the ball means that no chance was created. Is there a statistic for like just blatantly missing a ball and so it's not a drop
catch? That was actually always my go-to. If I didn't get a hand on a catch, it doesn't go down as a chance because I didn't get a hand on it. So I'm all for that.
Feeble excuse. I think it's worse. It's worse to not get a hand on it. It's even worse to then make an excuse about the sun. That's right down there. It had spin on it.
Well, you're always kind of caveating any chance, aren't you? Like when the ball's up in the air, even if there's no sun, I'll put my hand up. I'll like run around in a circle. Just
when the ball goes in the air, you're already thinking the excuses.
How am I going to explain this?
I'll
use an analogy. This is really the fundamental explanation for all of these things. I was captaining in fives one day, and there was this guy, you know, played across the line and was a bit iffy outside off stump. And it was very clear that, you know, if you just bowled one fifth stump on a length moving away, that he'd nick it. So first ball, middle stump, hit through the leg side. So, look, why don't we just bowl fifth stump and, you know, we'll nick him off. Second ball, on the pads, whip away through the leg side, said the bowler, said, look,
I'm out of ideas.
Yeah, it'd be great. Just try a fifth stump, on a length moving away. That'd be great. We'll nick him off. Next ball on the pads. Whipped away, said, mate, all we've got to do is bowl fifth stump on a length moving away and we'll nick this bloke off. And he said, Jonesy, there's a reason I'm in fifth grade. I'm not doing this deliberately. It's because I can't.
Oh, it's vulnerable.
That's great.
And
I just can't do it.
I can't do it. And that's like the same with catches. The reason I dropped it is because I'm not very good.
Yeah. I don't hate my teammates or the bowler. I just can't catch the ball.
Exactly. See, as a captain, you should have still said bowl fifth line, but then take your third slip out and put him in a second square leg or a second catch. Yeah, that's the way. Yeah. Thinking about bowling plans, I remember hearing a story, just in case of name dropping more. But this story actually doesn't involve me, but it was just I was told this second hand. But it was back in the days when the War brothers, who were good, played for Bankstown, and this guy that I was talking to played for Sydney Uni, and they were playing in a semi-final, and they all met on the Friday night beforehand and were thinking of ways to get out the War brothers. And the way they figured out to get Steve Waugh out was to run him out at the bowler's end, because when he like goes back, he obviously had a very pronounced back foot drive, which was sort of his shot, and he was famous for that. So their plan was to bowl back of a length to get him back, because often he like hits and runs. So he was so far deep in his crease that he'd be behind the eight ball, as it were. So they were going to run him out at the bowler's end. So that was the plan for Steve Waugh. Their plan for
how many did he hit that day?
He's still batting. This was in the 80s.
That's when they put on 400 the War brothers.
And then to get Mark Waugh out, they didn't have any ideas. And so this one guy put his hands up and he just said, I think we should just bowl on his pads. And everyone sort of looked around and just said, why would you bowl on Mark Waugh? Like, that's his one shot. And he said, I just want to stand there at mid-off and just go, great shot, Mark.
I heard a variation on that story, again, secondhand, but someone who did play the game against Bankstown. I think they were playing for Hawks. I think it was up at Benson's Lane. And they just kept bowling straight to Mark Waugh. And
he'll miss one.
An hour and a half later, brings up his 100 and walks off, and his teammates say, oh, great 100, Junior. And he just goes, don't those blokes watch television?
I believe that.
Oh, yeah.
I want to believe
You've
it.
You've heard similar stuff about Dean Jones, actually. Yeah. So here's the next one coming through from Lee Jones. I don't know if it's a relation. How do I maintain my rig and pipes while sitting on the couch and watching 12 hours of cricket a day? The eternal question.
Backless couch, just lean back, you know, 15 degrees and on a still. That'll keep the abs tight and then heavy.
So you're saying you're crunching?
Just leaning back a little, sort of in that position.
You just do dips on the sides of the couch?
Yeah, in between overs, ad breaks, push-ups, get 5 sets of 10 push-ups for the week.
That could be an idea, like the rig and pipes couch that just actually has like inbuilt bars on it.
Are you thinking we should do like a 6 minute abs type thing, like from something about Mary, just like for cricket? I think there's some marketing in that. I think
put your beer on a barbell so you've got to some turtles to drink it.
I like that. Yeah.
Okay, Mitch Walkerden writes in and says, I'm an average bat at best, but I'm averaging 141 at one particular ground. Am I right to tell anyone who will listen?
Yes, and never play there again.
I was going to say, play there again. Yeah, ever. Well, that's amazing. What was that, 114?
141 at one particular ground. I think that was Mitch's way of saying that he scored 140.
Yeah, he scored 140, yeah.
And I like how people go, am I right to tell anyone, but they've written it in.
They've written it in, yeah.
The great cricket.
Yeah, hoping for a retweet.
So there's one other one here, boys, from Andrew Suters on Facebook. He says, Josh Hazlewood signed my hat, and I said, thanks, champ, by reflex. Have I just outfitted an Australian test player, and if not, when should I move to England?
Great question.
I was really hoping that what he was going to say was he got Josh Hazlewood to sign his hat and Hazlewood wrote, thanks, champ.
Yeah. Has he outfitted him? Yeah, he definitely has outfitted him accidentally. We were just talking before about the word champ, weren't we? We were talking with our friend Andrew Wu in the press box, and we're talking about the
drop the name.
And we're talking about how you can make that an extension, like, because champ is obviously so common now, but you're looking for new ways to use champ. So he was, we've said before, championship.
Thanks, championship.
Yeah. Just anything with the word champ. Champs-Élysées.
Yeah. Ryan Carter suggested that Champs-Élysées is the new champ.
Champs-Élysées.
Champions League.
Yeah. Just say, how you going? Good, thanks, Champions League.
Yeah.
What about Gordon's fifth grade ground, Beauchamp?
I always thought it was Beauchamp.
I can never play there again.
I always thought it was Beauchamp.
No, it's always Beauchamp.
This one, it was a similar kind of line of questioning here, comes from Liam Maroney. Need advice. Tad long-winded, but here we go. You seem like good blokes. You're wrong there. As an opening bowler for my school team, who still wears his club top, we don't have a uniform, from the previous year to Alpha, my teammates and the opposition, I walked out to bat at 7 with a few overs to go. The keeper, who the previous batsman on my team had referred to as a flog constantly after getting out, so he's obviously from Melbourne, shouted out as I walked up to the crease, oh, I used to play for that club, after seeing my top. Was it too far to flat out say, used to? What? Did you get drop champ? The second his mouth closed.
I find it really jarring to think of someone walking out to bat and having such an elaborate comeback. What's the question? Was it right for him to do it?
Well, he just said, was it too far to flat out say that?
It's never too far.
It's not too far. It's just a weird, interaction that you've had. You sound like a weird bloke. But keep writing in, please.
Keep writing in, please, lovers. I have to issue a clarification. I referred to one of our posters yesterday as Max Wilson, and his name's Max Denning. Apologies,
that's
Max.
That's because Zach Wilson wrote in.
I
saw that message.
Did you see this one from Ryan Brady on the Twitter machine? Next time my wife asks for a massage, should I reach for my kookaburra bat oil?
the linseed rub.
I didn't know that they had branded bat oil, like each...
Who's still oiling bats?
I think you'll find the jar says it's flammable, so I would recommend it. You're not allowed to store.
Maybe a bit of sandpaper at the end of the massage.
Yeah, I'm sure. Keep the lid on and
use as lubricant. Just keep that in mind. But who's oiling bats? That's not a thing anymore.
Well, I used to do it with my dad. It was one of the great ways to bond with him. Yeah. And difficult to find ways to bond with him. But I know he's a lovely guy. But you know, when I was...
if you're listening.
But when I was 10, you know, I used to go down with my GM, and, you know, one of the things we would do every week was oil the bat, wait a day or two, sandpaper it off.
Yeah.
You know, pure masculinity in its finest form.
Smells good too.
Smelled good too.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like that. Yeah.
Linseed high.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've got
linseed high. Still chasing that first high.
We've probably come to the end of our 5-day festival of podcasting at the SCG. It's great to have finished in the Cricket New South Wales boardroom. You apparently really get much higher.
Beautiful mahogany table, leather-bound chairs, Winston almanacs everywhere,
and the CEO.
And the CEO of Cricket New South Wales, Andrew Jones.
Well, thanks, Chance. It's been a great treat to host you here, and an even bigger treat to be on the show. So thank you, and keep up the good work. Really enjoy your stuff.
So we're back. We're back. Regular broadcasting schedule will resume next week. We'll head into Fox Sports. We'll bring some high-vis gear to find each other in that dark, dark room. But thanks for tuning in each week. The feedback's been great. Keep your questions coming in. Hashtag AskTGC. Twitter, Facebook, you know the drill. Catch you next week.